I kind of have a rule, a hack, if you will, when it comes to dialogue, and that is the action always comes before the speech. This is Taylor Stevens, the New York Times bestselling and award-winning author of the kick-ass Vanessa Michael Monroe thrillers, and this is the Taylor Stevens Show with my good friend Steve Campbell, where we are kicking writing in the butt one word at a time.
Did you say award-winning?
I said award-winning. Yeah.
All right, we'll get to that. But before we do, we're going to talk about BoucherCon. Before we get to BoucherCon, I want to just let everybody know what this show is going to be about. It's sort of a complicated show. It's part three of our dialogue series. We had the first two a few weeks ago. This will be part three of that series. It's also going to be part one of another series, and we'll get into that when we're actually digging into this material. But first, we want to talk about BoucherCon. And since I led with award-winning, you won another award while you were there.
I won another award. I'm so excited to have won.
And I was excited that someone actually took a picture of it.
You know, pictures exist of the other ones too, but we actually have this one in our possession. Yeah, it was a really good time. Very unexpected. The other authors were amazing. And when I got up there, you know, I don't really prepare a speech because I didn't expect to win. And, you know, you get up there and you try not to make a fool out of yourself, and the lights are blinding you, and your blood is rushing through your head. And just me, I'm notorious for just babbling. So I get up there and I'm like, you know, you're in good company when your own reader is right to tell you how awesome the other guy's books are. Which really did happen. And Mark Cameron, who I'm, you know, proud to be able to call a friend, was one of the authors up for the awards. And I kind of called him out and I was like, Mark, I had two people write me and tell me how awesome you are. He thought that was funny, but yeah. So if you're looking for a good read, go check out Mark Cameron's books. There you go, Mark. There's two times for you.
But we will post the picture. Carol Newsom took a picture that I'm going to post. So she was there that night and took a picture. It's from a distance, but I could just imagine the surprised look on your face.
I wasn't even almost paying attention because, you know, like they were having all these, you know, they would flash the names and the pictures of everybody up on there and who was up for the award. And I was so focused on, oh, that's what that person looks like. That I didn't even hear them call my name at first.
And this was for The Mask, and it is, I don't know if we said this or not, but it's the Barry Award.
The Barry Award, which is an award from Deadly Pleasures magazine, which if you like reading thrillers, mysteries, crime fiction, it is probably a magazine you should be reading. It comes out every 3 months, and it's the where you go to find really fantastic writers who are not on the New York Times bestseller list month after month after month, like the obscure ones that you're just not going to hear about through normal channels or through Amazon recommendations or whatever. And they're really smart people who are curating those books. And it's definitely worth your attention to give them a look-see.
Okay, and I will link to that in the show notes. So there are a lot of reasons to go see the show notes this week, a lot of reasons, and you'll understand why as we get further into the show. You know, we just have so many great pictures from BoucherCon. You had your meetup after your panel. I do want to talk about the panel, which I've heard was excellent and funny. And
Zoe Sharp gets so much credit for that. She was the moderator, and she's really quick on her feet. Like, she's funny and keeps things moving, and she's just, I'm really glad she was moderating. She's good.
So you had that, and was that fun? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was a good time. Had really great panelists who were all very respectful of time and of each other, and good rapport between us. And I had a lot of people come up to us afterwards and just say, you know, that was really good. Thanks. You know, you guys were a lot of fun. And when you consider that there was another panel going on at the same time with Lee Child as the moderator and Gail Linz and all these other really big names, and these guys came to see us. I mean, like, we owe them serious thanks. So if they said they had a good time and it was worth it, then that's a good sign.
And I saw some tweets coming out of there, one of which said, and I'm paraphrasing, but essentially, readers care more about the F-bomb than they do people being massacred in fiction.
Oh, yeah, for sure, 100%. I mean, I've written about that before, too. And Zoe asked us, she's like, you know, okay, swearing or violence, which one's going to get you in more trouble? And every single person said the same thing, swearing. I mean, we all write violence, and nobody comes to me and says, oh, that scene was just over the top. But you wouldn't believe all the emails I get. I can't believe she swore while she cut his head off.
Oh, my. So after that, then you did you then as a group then go into the signing room? Is that the way it worked?
Yeah. The way it works is every panel will go has a signing slot after their panel time. So your panel's about 50 minutes, your signing slot's about 20 or so minutes, and that's how it just keeps throughout the day. So if ever you want to get your books signed by an author, you just find out what panels they're on, and then you know how to find them.
And then you had Chilling with Taylor, which
yes.
was your meetup
yes.
in the bar of all places.
Well, it was funny because we were going to go to this lounge, and then we were meeting up at 5, and the lounge didn't open until 5:30. So somehow we all still managed to find each other, which was really awesome. And down at the bottom of the hotel, like the whole lobby floor, like half the lobby floor is a lounge beside the bar. And so like it was full, like 24/7 practically of, you know, authors, which funny story for you, just a little aside here, is at one point one of our crew went to get a drink at the bar and the bartender said to them, I don't know where you all are putting that. Some Mardi Gras people don't drink as much as you guys do. Apparently, authors drink a lot.
I saw a post on Facebook from somebody, Patty Smiley, who writes mysteries, who said that I thought that, you know, there was just something in the air and my vision wasn't as good and maybe I wasn't getting enough sleep. And then I got home and realized I had my contacts in backwards.
Oh, my God.
So I don't know what you people did there, but it sounded like it was a good time.
It was a good time, yeah.
All right. And so we're going to have a picture from the meetup from a wonderful friend of the show, Joan, who took a picture and sent it to me. And I've seen it, and it's not maybe your best smile.
Oh, hush. I know what you're talking about.
So you'll have to check out the show notes for that. And anything else we should talk about regarding VoucherCon?
Yes, but I want to save it to the end of the show. So don't go away, you guys. There's more coming.
Ah, more coming about VoucherCon.
If you've been listening, you know that a few weeks ago, we put out a call for material to work with. We had that series that we were doing on dialogue, internal dialogue, external dialogue. And I was saying how it would be so much easier if I had actual material to work with because it allows me to give specific advice. And I received more than one submission. Thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who turned stuff in or considered turning stuff in. And the one that I chose, I'm running with it because it allows us to do more than just dialogue. It's a really strong piece, and it allows us to go over dialogue. It allows us to go over point of view issues and you know, little tweaks and show versus tell, and it's enough material to break it into three shows. And one of my biggest hesitancies in doing this is I don't want anyone, especially not this wonderful person who sent this material in, to think that this is somehow calling them out or saying that they did things wrong or saying that I'm better than they are, any of that. It is really, really, really hard to put yourself out there like that when you get it as good as you think you can get it, and it's pretty good, and then somebody just kind of tears it apart. And it takes a lot of guts to be willing to do that, especially knowing that it's going to go out on the open air. So this is a really brave thing, and this person, everybody who was willing to submit, deserves a lot of our kudos and gratitude, because without that, we wouldn't have the teaching tools that we have. So I just want to make sure that credit goes to where credit is due here. And the other thing to keep in mind is my way of doing things isn't the way of doing things. When a person has a way of doing things, that's what creates their voice and makes their style very distinct. And so by messing with other people's stuff, I'm actually taking their voice and converting it somewhat to my voice. And so it's a little touchy. I try not to get too heavy-handed with it. So just because I do it a certain way doesn't mean it has to be done that way. But it allows me to explain why I do it, and then you can sort of take it or leave it as it comes with that preamble to this.
All right. Now that that preamble is over, let me add my own preamble. First, I had the opportunity to read this, and I'll be reading some of it as we go through this. But when I got to the end of it, I'm like, oh, that's the end. I want to see more. So I really enjoyed this, and I'm fully engaged with the story from the brief amount of material that this writer sent us. So in terms of storytelling, I was really excited about this and want to see more when the time comes. For those of you out there, it's the kind of thing I think that to get the most out of, you know, if you're out driving in your car, running or something, you know, you're not going to want to be holding papers. But you might want to listen to this, and if it engages your mind, go to the show notes and print this out or just read along and listen again. And I think what Taylor's saying will make more sense that way. And we're going to be using this particular piece of material for the next three shows, and it will evolve over the course of the next three shows. So keep that in mind.
Right. So whatever changes we make on the air now, when we start next week's shows, those changes will be incorporated into the text. And Steve's going to post it, so you can actually see the changes from week to week. So you can start with the original, and you can see how it ends up. But the show is what's going to tell you why those changes are being made. So if it doesn't make that much sense, you know, when you're just hearing it, if you get a chance to go back and look at it, it should all come together really nicely.
Okay, I think we have preambled this thing to death.
Awesome. So I'm going to convince Steve. We're not going to read the whole thing because this show is about dialogue. So we're going to skip the parts of this that don't involve dialogue, even though they'll still be in the text online. So I'm going to convince Steve to read part of the opening, and we're going to work through that opening first and then move on as time allows us.
Should I read the title?
Yeah. And this is like a chapter within a bigger story.
Okay. So the title of what was sent to us is Searching for an Agent. Look, baby, the man growled around a cigar. It's not that you don't have talent. You clearly do. But you bring too many problems, so I can't work with you. The man rocked back in his beat-up warehouse chair, its spring squeaking loudly while stuffing poked out of the tears in the leather. Michelle was incensed. Such as? Your music, for one. I can't sell it. What's the matter with my music? Well, nothing and everything. It's pretty, and you've got a great voice, but you just don't fit.
Okay. So, this starts with an issue that I can't actually fix in this show. Which makes it for a little uncomfortable. When he starts, look, baby, the man growled around a cigar. So the man growled around a cigar is a problem because, A, we're using a different way of describing speech, and it's not really possible to growl. It's one of those tricky things. Another thing is I have a personal aversion to starting any opening scene, anything, without a sense of place, without a sense of anything. And further deep down, a few paragraphs below what Steve just read, we actually get a description of the office. We get a description of the man and all of that. And me personally, I would have that up top. So the reader already has in their head where we are, what we're seeing. And I can't do it in this because it's not specifically dialogue. So it's going to come up in a different show of how to integrate that. But for today, I'm just mentioning it. So now I'm going to move on to the rest of this paragraph of the guy speaking. Now, in my mind, I have a little bit more overview of this story than most people do now. This is a growly sort of guy. He's going to be brusque. He's not going to be overly effusive in his praise. In fact, if anything, he's going to be wanting to keep her in her place. So looking at that, I'm looking at this dialogue and thinking, there's too many words, and it's too, what's the word? Like, he's making her, he's lifting her up. What we have there in that problem is he is speaking to the reader. He's trying to inform the reader versus staying true to character. So I came in here and I cleaned it up in a few little tiny tweaks, okay? The first is when he says, "Look, baby," the man growled around Scar, "it's not that you don't have talent." I just changed that to, "You've got talent." I X'd out the clearly because that's too much. And I change it to, "You've got talent, but you bring too many problems. Can't work with you." So we've taken out a lot of words and narrowed all those words down to its essence. "Look, baby," the man growled around a cigar, "you got talent, but you bring too many problems. Can't work with you." The man rocked back in, and here is another thing that I'm constantly on the lookout for in my own writing. He rocked back in his beat-up warehouse chair. His is a pronoun. And when we give ownership of an item to a person in fiction, we take ownership away from the reader. And when you take ownership away from the reader, you are keeping the reader detached, one step removed, which is that much harder to draw into the story. It's a very, very subtle thing. And it affects many things in our perception of things, even in the value of how much weight a person carries in the eyes of others. For example, in my own third-person wordy version, or whenever publicists are talking about me, I don't want them to say her story, her this. It is the story, the whatever, because it is a very, very subtle but very impactful weight that is added to the thing. So I take out the his and I replace it with an A. The man rocked back in a beat-up warehouse chair. Then comes next word. It's a word that I'm very often on the lookout from my own writing, and it's the word it. It or its. If that word can be eliminated, by any means, eliminate it. It's a useless word that fills up space. It creates grammatically correct sentences, but it's just more syllables that have to be pronounced. So I just take out the its. The man rocked back in a beat-up warehouse chair's spring squeaking loudly. I add a comma. I take away the while. While is a very useful word. I use it a lot. But it in this context, it becomes unnecessary. Grammatically, someone might try and stick it back in. Cadence-wise, not needed. So the way my sentence would end here is, the man rocked back in a beat-up warehouse chair, spring squeaking loudly, stuffing poking out of tears in the leather. Okay, the next sentence. Michelle was incensed, such as? Now, here we hit an issue that is for another. The next podcast is, we're dealing with a show, don't tell here. He's telling us Michelle was incensed. We're going to have to cover that in the next show. But for now, we pass it on. Then she says, such as, your music for one. I can't sell it. What's the matter with my music? Well, nothing and everything. It's pretty and you've got a great voice, but you just don't fit. Well, I took pretty much all of that out. Because he's already told her that he can't work with her. And later, he's going to explain what's not working. And we're also going to see later that he says why he can't sell it. So at this point, it becomes redundant and unnecessary. And when he tells her, well, nothing and everything, that is attached to the I can't sell it and what's wrong with my music. And then he goes on to praise her. It's pretty and you've got a great voice, but you just don't fit. And in my opinion, and again, please disregard this completely. This is not my story. I'm messing with other people's stuff. I'm just saying this is how I would do it. I don't see a character like that being praiseful. He is gruff. He's disrespectful. And he's not going to be telling her how awesome she is. He's going to be trying to keep her feeling a little unclean to use her. So I just cut all of that down to Michelle was incensed, such as, you don't fit. And that is the end of my cuts on those that Steve read to us.
Okay, clean up a couple things here. When you were talking about your wordy version, you were talking about your website.
Yeah.
Just to be clear about that. You were talking about the bio. There are three different versions of the bio on Taylor's author website. So that's what she was talking about there.
Thank you, Steve.
And it's interesting because I've read so much of your stuff and I've had you go through my things. Most of what you just said didn't surprise me, but the pronoun thing really did. That one, like, came out of left field for me. And it's I see pronouns in my own work constantly, and it feels wrong. It feels wrong to have so many, and I struggle with just taking them out the way you did, just like ripping them out in this case and not replacing it with anything, just leaving it out. But it sounds better without it, in my opinion.
People often comment to me about the sparseness in my prose, the elegance of it. Elegance being more of a coding term, not a dress-up with pretty pearls term. It's cumulative, but these little things that I'm doing here is a lot of where that comes from. So it's not difficult to replicate.
And the removal of the word it's and the removal of the word while, It is the kind of thing that, for me, I could read that sentence a dozen times and I would read it fine. I might think maybe it could be cleaned up a little bit, and maybe the word his would have been the thing that jumped out at me, but the rest of it wouldn't have. But it just reads better because it has fewer words, I guess. I don't know.
Fewer words. It's like we've talked about in previous show that every unnecessary word is more that the brain has to process and has to get rid of in order to get to the essence of what it's trying to picture. And you're making movies for the reader, and you want as few interruptions, as little grit as possible in that movie making. Now, sometimes removing too many words can create its own level of grit, but you're really trying to get down to removing needless words.
Okay, I'll go ahead and read the next section. Look, honey, the music business is all about marketing, the man said, totally oblivious to the irony he presented. If I'm going to sell you, I have to know where you fit. But you're not country, you're not rock and roll, you're not rap, you're not anything. I don't know where to pigeonhole your music, so I don't know how to sell it. What else? Michelle simmered. Well, look at you. You're freaking gorgeous. That ought to be a huge plus. I ought to be able to use your looks to market you. But you've already said no photos. Now, what the hell is that all about? You think half the women singing CW would be as big if they didn't market their looks along with their songs? Michelle's anger began to bubble over. Anything else?
Okay. I take a pen to these paragraphs to really try and continue with the same voice of the earlier changes. The first thing I do is in that first sentence where it says, look, honey, the music is all about marketing. I've got a question mark around the word all, because all is a filler word. And so my version, I would prefer it to read, look, honey, the music business is about marketing. So I would X that out. Then we have the man said, totally oblivious to the irony he presented. Now, we've discussed this in a previous podcast about how it's said, period. And if you have said, comma, to go back through your work and change it. Get that to a period and change whatever needs to be changed. So this totally oblivious to the irony he presented, that's a good thought. It's interesting, but it doesn't belong here. So I'm deleting that out, and it may or may not show up in a future draft where we're introducing the character for the first time, but that's a dialogue tag. It's an add-on dialogue tag, which is the equivalent of he said obliviously, right? It just happens to have some more text after it. So it's got to go. It just doesn't belong. Look, honey, the music business is about marketing, the man said. If I'm going to sell you, I have to know where you fit. But you're not country, you're not rock and roll, you're not rap, you're not anything. So the punctuation is not my forte, so, you know, just ignore anything with punctuation. But in this particular case, I'm changing things up. So I turn that first part. If I'm going to sell you, I have to know where you fit, period. You're not country, you're not rock and roll, you're not rap, you're not anything. He goes on to say, I don't know where to pigeonhole your music, so I don't know how to sell it. I took it out. Because a man like this is not going to admit that he doesn't know how to do anything. He's going to make it feel like it's her fault. So we already know from him telling her, you're not country, you're not rock and roll, you're not rap, that she's not pigeonholed. So that then becomes redundant in extra words, and it creates a thing about the character where he's not as confident in himself as he otherwise would be in that type of scenario. So, few little tweaky changes, and that paragraph of dialogue becomes, look, honey, the music business is about marketing, the man said. If I'm going to sell you, I have to know where you fit. You're not country, you're not rock and roll, you're not rap, you're not anything.
When I was reading that section the first time, when I read it to myself, not right now, but when I was reading it quietly sitting in a chair, I didn't notice what I noticed when I was reading it out loud. And when I was reading it out loud, it felt wordy to me. It sounded wordy. And I think what you've done really cleans that up. And I think it sounds a lot better now. And so much of this is, I know you talk about this from time to time as well, especially with dialogue. It's about how it sounds rather than how it looks.
How it reads, yes. And it's experience. And again, I want to go back and say, this is not a criticism of the person who wrote this, because it was already really good. And all we're doing is just making it a tiny bit better. Take it or leave it. This is just my way. It's not the way. Doesn't mean my way is better. Other people might prefer the original version. So, you know, just take it all with a grain of salt. And if it helps, it helps. If it doesn't, then just ignore it.
And if you're not sure, go back and listen to the preamble again. All right, let's move on.
Okay. What else, Michelle Simmerd? Now, with the Michelle Simmerd, we have another issue of showing versus telling versus showing. And it's kind of beyond me to fix this, because it's not my story, and it's also not the topic of this particular podcast. But what I want to do here is say that in my draft of this, without fixing the simmering part, I've reversed the words. And I kind of have a rule, a hack, if you will, when it comes to dialogue, and that is the action always comes before the speech. And that's because that's the way the mind needs it for it to flow seamlessly. When you say what else, and then Michelle Simmerd, never mind that it is a dialogue tag that we should not have, that Michelle said, not simmered, the words come before the tone. And so the reader has to restructure those in their brain as they're reading it. Michelle simmered, period. What else? Now I've got the next paragraph, and I'm going to read it again just because it's been a while. So here's the original. Well, look at you. You're freaking gorgeous. That ought to be a huge plus. I ought to be able to use your looks to market you, but you've already said no photos. Now, what the hell is that all about? You think half the women in singing CW Country Western would be as big if they didn't market their looks along with their songs? I'm stuttering because I'm reading through my changes here. So here we've got the opening. I took the first three sentences. Well, look at you. You're freaking gorgeous. That ought to be a huge plus. And I changed it to, you got looks. That's a marketing plus. I completely got rid of, I ought to be able to use your looks to market you, because we got that already crammed in to the first sentence. It says, but you already said no photos. I took out, you've already said, but no photos. The next sentence says, now, what the hell is that all about? Well, we already know how I feel about the word all, so that got scratched out. I contracted hell is to hells, and I removed now. So what it says now is, what the hell's that about? There's a few removal of words, and the sentence is quick and clean. The next is, again, it is cutting out little words between words to get the statement. And so it said, you think half the women's singing CW would be as big if they didn't market their looks to go along with their songs. And I changed that to, let's see if I can get this right. You think the women in CW would be big without looks to go with their music. Now, some of these words are choices, word choices. There's no reason why songs should be less good or less effective than music. But to me, music seemed to be the better fit for that particular sentence. So that's the way that I did it. I took out the word along because it's sort of redundant in the way that it is. So every single one of these were put there, were taken out as a way to speed things up. Now, what the hell? Now is an unnecessary word. It's just a filler. So take that out. The contraction speaks for itself. We already discussed the word all. A question mark to me was, you think half the woman? I don't know. Maybe it is half the woman or not. I removed the word, but doesn't mean that it has to be removed. That's just the way that I did it. I took out singing because that's two large syllables where one for in, one simple word in, because it flows better. Just cut it down. You think the woman in CW would be as, again, it's another question mark, as big or just big? Remove it if it's not necessary. If they didn't, without. I'm going to read the whole thing now as it's been changed to how it reads at the end. You got looks. That's a marketing plus. But no photos? What the hell's that about? You think half the women in CW would be big without looks to go with their music? So the next line, the last line from what we've already read is, Michelle's anger began to bubble over, anything else. So that's another show versus don't tell, but it's in the right order. It goes first before the dialogue, so that's correct. And then we'll hit that one on the next show when we're talking about tell versus show.
That's interesting, though, that he chose what else Michelle simmered in one instance, and then later on showed it differently. Michelle's anger began to bubble over, anything else. So he reversed it. And I agree with the way you do things, although so much of what I read is not that way. It's dialogue and then action, but it just makes more sense. It in your own mind, it makes more sense to know what the person is doing before they say the words rather than after.
The best best way that I can describe why I do that. And it's such a bizarre explanation. It's almost embarrassing. But it's when I was younger, I saw like a how-to video on giving a massage. And one of the things that they were teaching in this how-to was the masseuse never takes their hands off the patient, the client. If ever they're moving from place to place, or ever they are lifting one hand, there is always one hand connected to the person's body. Because if you remove both hands and then touch them again, that becomes a shock a little bit. It's not relaxing. But if you're always in contact with the client, if you move around the table, they always know where you are. There's never a disconnect and then a reconnect. Well, and when I do this, the way that I do it, it is so that we are never taking our hands off the reader. The reader always knows where we are in the story. And when you have somebody speak before the reader knows who they are, before the reader knows where they are, the reader knows anything about them, you are removing your hands from the reader.
That's a great explanation.
A little weird, but...
Well, anyone who's ever had a massage will recognize that. Okay, we have one last section to cover, and I will read that. Yeah, a biggie. You won't listen. You don't get to do that until you've gone platinum, gorgeous. For crying out loud. Here I've been trying to help you, and you won't listen to a damn thing I tell you. Oh, no. You got to do it your way. The man stubbed out his smelly black cigar and reached into a drawer to pull out another, which he quickly lit with a match that stank up the room nearly as badly as the foul-smelling cigar. He blew out the flame with a cloud of smoke and tossed it into an ashtray full of butts and burnt matches.
Okay, so this is really a cool opportunity here because we have a paragraph of dialogue, and then we have a paragraph of action and description. And so it's awesome because ideally those will both be intertwined between each other. So, but that's too much to do on this particular show. So I'm just highlighting them like, oh my God, these two paragraphs need to be together. We're going to integrate those. And on the next show or the one after, I'm going to show you how to do that. But in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and clean up the dialogue and put placeholders to where I would put these beats, these movement beats. So the first thing I do with the dialogue paragraph is he uses the word gorgeous to describe the girl, like honey, sugar, all this thing. And it shows up after the third sentence. And so just the way we speak normally, we would say, yeah, sugar, yeah, honey, yeah, gorgeous, or whatever. So I'm moving that up ahead so that instead of it saying, yeah, a biggie, it says, yeah, gorgeous, a biggie. The next thing I did is there's two places in this dialogue where he uses the words won't, you won't listen. And I've changed both of those to don't. Not that necessarily one is better than the other, but if you decontract them, do not versus will not, do is a much more powerful word than will. So in that context. So I've done it because of the stronger context. When you tell someone you don't listen, you are telling them what they will or will not do. When you say something you won't listen, it means that person's, the other person still has the decision-making power. So it's more of an insult to tell someone you don't listen than to tell them you won't listen. Again, it's a very, very subtle thing. And so just because I'm doing it that way doesn't mean that is the way, but I did it that way. So I changed it to you don't listen. And I put a beat after. Beat one is going to go right after that period and listen, and I'm breaking up the text. So it would go, yeah, gorgeous, a biggie, you don't listen. And then comes beat one, which we're going to pull out of that paragraph of action and description that follows. Then he says, in the original, you don't get to do that until you've gone platinum. Then he originally said gorgeous, and we've just cut it there. Then I'm inserting two beats, beat two and beat three. And the question you might ask now is, well, why are you inserting two beats instead of just saying, just putting one beat there? And it's because of the way that I'm going to break down the next series of texts. It's going to be separated into two distinct movements. And so they're both going to go there in order. And it'll make more sense when we get to the next show when we're digging that down. I have completely removed "for crying out loud" here, because it is unnecessary words. It's sort of an, "for crying out loud" is an exclamation of exasperation. And this man may be exasperated with her, but he's not going to give her that control or that power over her. So I just removed that. "I've been trying to help you and you," and again, he says, "won't listen." He repeats that and I change it to, "don't do a damn thing I say." He says, "I've been trying to help you and you won't listen to a damn thing I tell you. I've been trying to help you and you won't, and you don't do a damn thing I say." Again, it's more control-y to controlled of, "I'm in charge, you're subservient, you're not obeying," for lack of a better word. "Oh no, you gotta do it your way." Here is one place where I have reversed the "it's" and put an "it's" in instead of taking one out. And it has to do with the pronoun possessiveness of it, where he's telling her, "you got to do it your way." It just reads more forcefully to say, "oh no, it's gotta be your way." So the original is, yeah, a biggie. "You won't listen. You don't get to do that until you've gone platinum, gorgeous. For crying out loud, here I've been trying to help you and you won't listen to a damn thing I tell you. Oh no, you got to do it your way." And now it reads, "yeah, gorgeous, a biggie. You don't listen. You don't get to do that until you've gone platinum. I've been trying to help you and you don't do a damn thing I say. Oh no, it's got to be your way."
We are way over on time for this episode, so we appreciate you hanging in there with us. We have, again, this is part three of our dialogue, three-part dialogue thing, and it's part one of dealing with this material. So there are two more parts to come. It'll all make a lot more sense by the time we're done. But if you go to the show notes, you'll be able to see the original of what we're talking about today and the revised versions. And then you can listen to this and hear that it makes a lot more sense. So Taylor, what are we going to do next week?
We're going to do more of this.
Excellent.
We're going to move on to some of the things we talked about earlier of the show don't tell, putting words in their proper places, and again, more word choices and et cetera.
And we have a VoucherCon call to action.
Yes, this is very dear to me, and I know we're short on time, so I'm going to try and make this so short, but 2019 VoucherCon is going to be in Dallas. Dallas is my city. I want you to be there.
there it is.
Registration is already open. It is way cheaper to register now. And if you register, you can already reserve a room in the hotel. From personal experience, I can tell you that if you don't reserve a room at least a year out, you're not going to be on site unless somebody cancels, because it fills up that fast. There's no harm in reserving and then hopefully never changing your mind, but you know. So go check it out. If you Google VoucherCon 2019, actually Steve will probably, I'm knowing Steve, he's going to post a link in the show notes. Go register. Please do it. Do it for me.
There we have it. And I will say this, being at any conference, even a small conference, it's really important to be in the hotel where the conference is, because these things are exhausting. And sometimes you just need to take a break. If you're not in the hotel, it's really hard to do that. And VoucherCon is a it's so much bigger than most conferences that it's I didn't really get a sense of how big it was until I started seeing pictures this time. It's just mammoth. The rooms where the events took place were just enormous.
Yeah. And also, like, I live here. I'll still be on site. I'll stay at the hotel because it's so much better when you do.
Okay, so we will have links to that in the show notes, and this is maybe, in the history of the internet, the first ever three-year-in-advance call to action.
Yes, and I really apologize for going over today. I hope this was worth it. And
I think this is great, and I hope people like it. We'll be back again next week with part two of this series on breaking down and rebuilding this segment of material that we got from this oh-so-generous author.
See you guys next week.